minutes ago. I'm looking real good in my passport photo.
Amateur Traveler, episode 796. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about beaches and boobies, sugar plantations and megaliths, Lord Nelson, and an active volcano, as we go to the nation of Antigua and Barbuda. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Let's talk about Antigua. I'd like to welcome back to the show Jeff Ulfs, who's come to talk to us about Antigua and Barbuda. Jeff, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me, Chris. I always love chatting with some place in the world with you.
Well, and we have talked about California state parks, and we have talked about Monterey, and we have talked about Joshua Tree National Park. I wanted to call it National Monument, which I think it was for a while.
Yeah.
Where Jeff used to be a ranger. And why are we talking about Antigua and Barbuda? What is your connection with that?
It was one of the islands I had planned before COVID to visit and got kind of canceled. And so I had credits, so I needed to get them used. And it's a beautiful islands, and I'm glad I went. There's a lot of nature there. As you know, I'm very park-centric. So
strangely enough, yes.
For obvious reasons.
And why should someone go to Antigua and Barbuda?
Well, there's a lot of nature and history there. I'll say right off the bat, they've got the all-inclusive resorts all over the place. It's a great Caribbean island if you want to get away and just do the all-inclusive and beach stays and vacations. I'm not that kind of a person. But they say they have 365 beaches, one right. For every day of the year there. And I got to say, I counted quite a few. So I did not go to the 365 mark. And even on their license plates, they call themselves the land of sea and sun. So great place.
Very cool. Excellent. And what kind of itinerary are you going to recommend for us?
Not a significant itinerary. I think you can do most things in 4 days, maybe five. There's a couple trips off the island. We're going to be talking, of course, about Antigua and Barbuda, which is a former British colony that gained independence in 1981. So you have those two islands. There's also the third island that most people aren't familiar with, Redonda, which is off the coast and needs special permission to visit. It's kind of the Galapagos of the Caribbean. And really love my special permission and helicopter ride out there. And then, if you have time, there's a couple-hour day trip over to Montserrat we can talk about.
Excellent. So we talk about Antigua and Barbuda, which are two different islands in one nation. And we're going to start on Antigua?
In Antigua. Maybe we should put it on the map a little bit.
That sounds like a good plan.
It's just below the U.S. Virgin Islands and the Dominican Republic. It's kind of the north end of what they call the Leeward Islands there, or the north end of at least the Caribbean island chain. In one place, you can stand and see, well, you can see Redonda, you can see Nevis, you can look over and see Montserrat, and maybe the Nether Vista Point, you can look south and see Guadeloupe. They're all visible from that island. The only island you can't see actually from Antigua is Barbuda, and they say it's because it's so flat. It really just doesn't show up on the horizon on that one. So that's about where it's placed. Antigua itself is only about 14 miles by 11 miles, although they say you can get anywhere within 45 minutes of where you're at from there. Barbuda's not much bigger at 15 miles by 8 miles. I think there was 22 miles of road on the whole island, and I did all 22, north to south. Redonda has no roads whatsoever. It's only a mile long by about a third of a mile wide. Hmm. And then I'll just mention two Montserrats, about 11 miles by 7 miles. But it has about, 14 miles of road from one end to the other. So they're not big places.
Right.
The roads are typical, narrow, potholed roads. So it takes a while to get around them. Antigua being the main island, little traffic in the morning, little traffic in the afternoon. I rented a car. Mm-hmm. Like you've been there, you were there by cruise ship.
Right, just last year.
Yeah, I flew in, so had my rental and was able to tool around the island for several days. They do drive on the left. And so you just got to watch that. And you also, whoever flies in, you have to buy their driver's license. So $20 US at this time grants you the right to drive in their country. So that's you got to pick up their special. Yeah. They are not members of the International Driver's License Conference. You know, okay. It's those AAA things, so they don't recognize that. They apparently want your $20 so you can have a license to drive in their country.
Well, these years especially, they could use your $20 because I don't remember what the number was, but I think they told us that 80% of the economy, somewhere in that range, was tourism. And that, of course, went away for 2 years with the pandemic. I know we mentioned that when I did the tour there with the Windstar cruise last year, that we were the first cruise ship to come into port since, I don't know, early 2000. When did that start? 2020?
Yeah, 2000, yeah.
Feels like it was longer ago than that. Our tour guide there, as in one of the other islands we visited, it was her first day back at work. So it's been a rough slog. So I'm sure they could use that $20.
Yeah, they can. And I'll also, since you mentioned cruises, and of course you came in by cruise ship, when I was there, we had 3 cruise ships in port at one time. And my understanding, they can have up to 5 cruise ships.
Okay.
Even with the 3, given the current COVID situation, I think the ships were only about a third full because it just didn't seem like there was that many, still that many people in town. But you can imagine that island, as small as I've mentioned it, with 5 cruise ships and everybody there. Plan accordingly, I guess, is my caution for future visits.
Well, and you say in port, the main port would be St. John's.
St. John's.
Although we actually spent one night down at English Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
So we spent 2 different nights on the island and did really great planning where when we were in St. John's, we visited English Harbor and we were English Harbor. We went elsewhere in the island, which in retrospect wasn't the best planning, but as it were.
Yeah, well, it's not a big island.
It's not.
I've got to say, because we're in COVID period now, how great Antigua does with everything. I mean, first off, you have to have a PCR 3 days in advance before you even get into the country, negative PCR. And they test you as soon as you arrive. They do a temperature check and some other stuff. But every place that you go to, they're very kind. I mean, you have to wear a mask the entire time you were there, and hopefully that'll eventually be lifted. But let me just say that whether it's a restaurant, a shop, a visitor center, you have to hand sanitize before you go in. And if you do not hand sanitize, they will not let you in. They're doing a pretty good job of keeping everybody safe down there. So I felt really comfortable with that in mind. So
okay.
I do want to go back just a little bit because I know you and I are kind of both history fans and stuff. But just mentioned that the 3 islands, particularly Antigua, Barbuda, and Redonda, were all sided by the Arawak or the Carib Indians or the natives on the island.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, Columbus showed up, and it was on his second voyage in 1493 that he sighted and named Antigua, Barbuda, and Redonda. He named Antigua after a church called the Church of Santa Maria de la Antigua in Seville, Spain.
Okay.
And in Redonda was also, it was named the Santa Maria la Redonda when he sighted it all on his voyage in 1493. But anyway, that's kind of the origins of at least a couple of the names there. And since we might be talking about Montserrat, he also gave that a name after a Spanish monastery.
Sure, the one south of Barcelona.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's kind of the gist behind the names there with Columbus being around. I will say that also for travelers that they use the East Caribbean dollar, but they pretty much take U.S. currency wherever.
Right.
So it's not too bad. Mainly they were, like most of the Caribbean islands, they were all sugar plantations.
Right.
Of course, slavery was also involved with that. They finally kind of converted over, like you mentioned, tourism in about 1970. So you fly in, at least since I flew in, you went to the port there at St. John's, which is the capital.
Mm-hmm.
I flew into the V.C. Byrd International Airport, which is actually on the east side of the island. St. John's, the capital, is on the west side of the island, so it's about a 15-minute drive across to it. And that's where I stayed. It was called Antigua Sea View Inn, although you kind of had to be on the second and third floor to actually see the sea. But it was a really nice little place. They're kind of like apartments. There's 3 apartments on each floor. They have a kitchen and everything. So really nice. The lady there, the owner, was super fantastic to me. A shout out to her. Even though there's plenty of resorts, all-inclusive throughout the island, every corner of the island has them, which is good as far as restaurants are concerned. I'll throw about eating out there. On Sundays, pretty much everything's closed.
Oh.
So you got to kind of find your own. I mean, there are a few places open. You just got to figure out where they're at. But they do shut down a lot on Sunday. I'm not sure if a cruise ship comes in on Sunday, they might stay open, but they're certainly not when I was there. So, yeah, so St. John's, as we mentioned, is the capital. It's you got to watch out for the one-way streets. they're not always signed which way they go. So make sure you take an extra look going, well, okay, which way are the cars parked and where are people traveling? Because I made that mistake at least once. But it is nice that they're one way if you figure out how it goes. That way you don't have to worry about what side of the road you're driving on.
Right.
And St. John's is not a huge town in any sense of the means. They've got the parliament there, the prime minister. St. John's Episcopal Cathedral, which is one of their old cathedrals, is there. They also have a huge hospital you can kind of see. Mm-hmm. It's kind of up on a hill that you can see from all over the place. Downtown is pretty much shops and restaurants and the typical, kind of want to call it a cruise port, but that's kind of what it is. But there are some really nice restaurants downtown and good place to eat.
Did you want to recommend some of the restaurants downtown as long as
you're turning? Yeah, I would like to recommend Hemingway's.
Okay.
It was, man, I went there several times. The owners are British. They've been, it's actually been in the family for a number of years, twice since it was founding. And they just bought it back, I think, a few years ago. It's the mother-in-law that actually kind of runs it. She's from England. Good food, really great place. You sit up on the veranda, it's on the second floor, so you can look out up and down the street, watch the world go by. And we'll talk a little bit about food later and stuff, but yeah, it's a really good restaurant. Highly recommend. Now, Antigua and Barbuda as a country, again, as a parky, has, I just lost my count, 1, 2, 3, 4 national parks. Okay. In the country, with Redonda hopefully sometime in the future being a fifth one. We'll talk about that there. So my kind of first stop was just outside of town at two of the national parks. One is called Fort Barrington. It's one of the old coastal defense forts. And you're going to find here on Antigua, particularly as we get down to Nelson's Dockyard, there's a lot of British coastal defense forts around.
Right.
And Fort Barrington protects the harbor for St. John's. You cross a little river, cross a bridge, and hike to the top of the hill. And it's a dilapidated old stone fort. Not really a whole lot to see, but it's got some beautiful views of the coastline in the harbor. Be careful hiking up to the top. There is no real defined path. It's just everybody goes wherever they want, and it's now just become a small rock scamper up to the top.
Okay.
With little rock studs. Just watch your footing is all I'll say on that. And so getting to the top and beautiful views. But the one that was most intriguing to me, though, was just a little bit to the south of that, and it's called Green Castle Hill National Park.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the Stonehenge of the Caribbean. There's megalithic rock formations there and about three different sites on the top of this hill, which I'll just say has some fantastic views, at least of the north and the central part of the island. So much so that one of the governors is buried at the top of the hill next to one of the megalithic sites. His tomb is right there. I would hire a local guide to get you up there. It's not that difficult, but it just makes it so much easier having someone who knows the place to get you up there. You park it in somebody's backyard, and that's kind of the thing. You got to figure out exactly where that
nice whose backyard.
Yeah. The problem with this park is it's right next to an open pit mine quarry,
yeah,
which is really endangering the park. Hmm. And you're basically hiking up the pit quarry road to get to the top. And while the stones are sticking out, it's the path to them at least the one at the very top is kind of, so I'm going to give a shout out to Trek Tours of Antigua and Sean, who's the co-owner guide. He took really good care of me getting up there. And I'm thankful that he was taller than I was, because during the time of the year that I was there, and this was in January, the exotic weeds were taller than me growing up. So it caused two problems. Well, not two problems, but at least I could follow Sean up the hill because I see his head above the weeds. But the other problem, of course, is it kind of, you don't get an overly clear view of the megalithic stones. And I talked to the island national park archaeologist when I was there. And I mean, it is a known site, habitation site for the Arawak Indians. And these stones are set up in different angles. One they call the throne. You can actually just kind of sit on at the top and look out, whether or not that's its original purpose. But that's, everybody goes up there and does their little selfie sitting on the throne.
Okay.
So it's not that far of a hike, but it is a pretty steep, I would call it old Jeep trail, just getting to the top. And then once you get up there, you've got to bushwhack up to the top. And there are three different locations, one at the top, and then there's two down on a smaller knoll. And I like dolmens. but okay. rock slabs are protruding out of the ground in various different angles and things like that. The only one that's discernible, as I said, is the throne. So that's kind of a neat little place.
And stop me if I'm wrong. When you say dolmen, I think a dolmen is a burial site, though.
Yeah, yeah.
And these are not.
No, these are not. Okay. I'm just kind of referencing rocks yep. coming out of the ground. They yep. don't have the tabletop across the top, but mm-hmm. Maybe they did at one time. I don't know. And who knows if they're burial. I couldn't quite get the whole. But this might be a solstice site. It might be an astronomical site. They're still trying to study it and figure it out what it is. But not many people really know about it. But it is technically in a national park. And it's only for a couple hours. It's not a huge. It wasn't even a half mile to the top. But we're talking about a Caribbean island for me in January. Warm. Not overly humid. But you're climbing to the top of a barren mountain with no shade, so
sure.
keep that in fact. So, but it, oh gosh, the views up there. I mean, you can see Nevis, you can see Redonda, you can see Montserrat, all from the top up there. So even that was nice and enjoyable. So I left there and actually drove around the island on the west coast, down and around, following the coast south. And then you got to cross over to, as we're going to talk about, Nelson's Dockyard. Mm-hmm. You cross over what some of the natives refer to as their rainforest. It's probably the most lush green area. And it's called Fig Tree Drive. Not 100% sure where the fig tree, I mean, there's a lot of banana plantations there. But right. it is popular. It's a nice little drive up and over the top. I mean, we're not talking huge mountains here. I mean, you and I both know the Santa Cruz Mountains, so driving up and over to the coast is not quite that high, so it's not a significant drive up and over. Okay. But once you get up and over the top, then you're going to drop down into Nelson's Dockyard. And I know you've been there.
Almost the only place I've been. I've been to one beach and Nelson's Dockyard, and that's all I've seen on the island.
The thing that impressed me most about Nelson's Dockyard, and being a West Coast boy, it reminded me for a lot like Golden Gate National Park, or recreation area. All the military fortifications along the headlands, the harbor, mm-hmm. it's a military post, so everything is related to the military, the governor's house, all right there at the harbor. I don't know if you got up to the headlands or not.
Yeah. So you're talking about across the way from the harbor, looking down into the harbor.
Yeah. Shirley's Heights is one of them.
Yep. We went to Shirley's Heights lookout. Yep.
Yeah. Shirley Heights. And you get these views and it's really beautiful. The blockhouse point. So there's all these mm-hmm. military abandoned fortifications. So maybe we should talk a little bit. Nelson's Dockyard, named after Horatio Nelson of the British. I know he visited the place. He served in the Caribbean. I don't think he was ever commander of the post, but they obviously...
was stationed there for a while, as I recall.
Was he stationed? I couldn't quite get a handle on that from the various different...
We actually talked to one of the archaeologists who was doing research there, and I think he mentioned that he was stationed there, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. So most of the architecture is kind of Georgian. It was a pretty mm-hmm. significant harbor for the British. It was not only, of course, a place for the Navy to be as a military post, significant in the Caribbean because they patrol from there. One side, I said, they utilized it to police the Caribbean. But its main purpose was a refitting station.
Right.
So all the ships would come in there and they'd work on the sails and the masts. And it was really a great harbor for hurricanes.
I know we'll and that's talk about that. Really significant for the British because they had this harbor that they could leave their ships in the Caribbean during hurricane season while the French and the Spanish and everyone else had to leave and go home. Because they didn't have such a good protected harbor. And so it gave them a real edge that, especially a month either side of the hurricane season, they're the only ships in the area. So very strategic base, which is why all the forts protecting it, basically to keep somebody from landing and taking out the ships here. But yeah, and you have all of the facilities where you can keel your ship, turn it over and scrape the barnacles off the hull and all those things that are still there. And there are people who are still doing it in the dockyard. They're still servicing boats from the dockyard, and especially the old wooden boats.
Exactly. Their National Park Service has done a great job of adapting mm-hmm. for uses all the old buildings so that they're not just rotting. I mean, there's certainly ruins up on the point. Blockhouse Point, I'll just throw this out. Did you look over and see Eric Clapton's house?
We did get pointed out Eric Clapton's house, which you can see from Black House Point, yes.
Yeah, it's a narrow peninsula with his home on it. And everybody's, oh, did you see Eric Clapton's place? It's like, yeah, it's across the way there. Yep, I see it. So, but the harbor is really neat.
You did not get an invitation, though, I should say. Yeah,
well, you know, I hate to say I was looking for an Indian village site, and I got almost out to his house, but the road was horrible, so I don't know how he gets out there. But down in Nelson's dockyard itself, little shops, it's a great little place. While I was there, there's at least one restaurant. I don't know where you stayed there, but did you eat at the Admiral's Inn?
No, we just had a glass of rum, I think was all we had when we were there.
Yeah, there's two restaurants. The harbor is not that big. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of ships there, don't get me wrong, but it's not huge. It's not like San Francisco Bay.
Yeah, the significance was more that it was protected rather than it was huge.
Exactly. The Admiral Inn is a restaurant on one side of the harbor, and if you want to eat at the restaurant on the other side of the harbor, you can take a little boat. They'll ferry you in a little dinghy across to the other restaurant on the other side. It's a great place to just sit back and relax. I have to say their jerk baby back ribs there were really good.
And one thing that you're going to see possibly in this Nelson's Dockyard, UNESCO World Heritage Site, we should say.
Oh, yeah.
They've recently discovered, when we were there, they had recently discovered a ship that had sunk in the harbor years ago. And so it's possible that in the future, there will be more of this shipwreck to see, although it usually takes quite a few years if they want to take that ship and bring it out on the land again. There's quite a lot of preservation work, but there's ongoing archaeology in the area, including in the harbor.
And if I'm not mistaken, that ship was from the American Revolution.
I think you are correct. I don't remember.
I'm not sure. I'm trying to think now. I did talk to the park operations manager, who's an archaeologist, grew up in Sacramento.
Same guy. Okay.
Yeah, same guy? Okay. Yeah. They don't have that many people. So yeah, I'm trying to remember exactly what he said about that. But the other thing I'll just quickly mention, because I know we got to get on to the other places. But while I was there, the Atlantic Challenge was just ending. And it's a boat ride. One of the first vessels had just arrived. It's a ocean rowing event for 3,000 miles from La Gomera, Canary Islands, to the Nelson's Dockyard. And they had like two of the ships, I could only see two, had just arrived. So it was a whole bunch of festivities for them having crossed the Atlantic by rowing. So that was a nice experience to be there for that. Of course, I wanted to go back and mention the ships too. I don't know about you, but there are some multi-million dollar ships sitting in that port.
Oh, yes.
I was having lunch and listening to the people next to me.
We're thinking of bringing our yacht there, actually.
Okay. Yeah, well, my rubber raft wouldn't quite make it that far, but they were sitting next to me. I don't know. One was from England, one was from the U.S., and how they were in the Pacific this month, and they were heading to the Spanish Islands next month, and I'm sitting there having my lunch going, what the heck? So there's a lot of money parked in that harbor, let me tell you.
There is indeed. And the shipwreck is thought to be the ruins of the 1762, that's the year, the Beaumont, a heavily armored merchant ship built by the French East India Company.
All right. Leaving from there, I went up the east coast to the next national park, which is called Devil's Bridge. It's not very big. It's just a arch, I guess, for a bridge on the coast that the surf comes into and crashes up behind it. It's kind of a nice little place. There's some little headlands on the peninsula that a walk around. But the main attraction there is the natural bridge. It's not that big of a place. You can do it in 30 minutes and then drive down the road to Betty's Hope. Betty's Hope is, well, we talked about the sugar plantations being on the island. This is probably the best preserved of those sugar plantations. Their first large plantation started in 1650. It's a lot in ruins, but they did restore two of their windmills. Of the 150, apparently, they used to be there.
Oh, my.
So you can get a walk around, understand a little bit about the sugar plantation. They did a really nice job on the windmills, and just see the ruins of the master home, the manager's house, and spend an hour or so there walking and seeing all that's there to see. On all these places, well, not all of them. Let's see. Yeah. Betty's Hope, there's a fee to get into. Nelson's Dockyard, there is a fee to get into. Betty's Hope is a nonprofit preservation association there that manages that and keeps it up. But it's really neat to see how they restored the windmill to its working conditions. From there, let's take a quick run out to each of the islands. Let's take a look at Barbuda. You can take a day trip out. There's a company called Barbuda Express, which will take you the 20-some-odd miles across. It's about a 90-minute each way boat ride.
Okay.
Go in the morning, go in the afternoon. The company provides a guide for you in the car when you get there. And they also include lunch. Unless you want lobster, then you're going to have to pay an extra $10 for the lobster. But Antigua and Barbuda actually have lobster. So I did have the lobster lunch on the island. It's different. Probably more inclined to my main lobster, but it's kind of fun to sit there on a beach having lobster. And they give you a big portion. Barbuda is really flat. I think it's like 13 miles from one end of the paved road down to the other end of the paved road. The major thing there is really two things that people like to go see. One is their other national park called Codrington Lagoon National Park. It is the largest magnificent frigate bird breeding colony in the Caribbean in the mangroves. And for those, the frigate birds are the ones you always see the pictures of where the male blows up its red chest. Looks kind of like a heart. You take a little boat ride out to the National Park mangroves there, and there's hundreds and hundreds of them flying all over the nests and the trees, the chicks and their plumage and their young down plumage. So it's kind of a nice ride over there. They also drop you off for a few minutes, not a few minutes, but about a half an hour at a place called the Pink Sand Beach. It's also known as 11 Mile Beach. I'm guessing it's coming from the coral. You're walking along this beautiful beach, and it's 11 miles long, I'm guessing. That's why it's named. And there's just, all this pink coral up on the sand that you can walk in amongst. And of course, this frigate bird is still flying around there, too. It's a nice little excursion there. They always want to also, after that, take you to their sea cave over on the east side of the island, which is okay. But like I said, the island's not big. It's very flat. There's a lot of donkeys and goats running everywhere. The sad thing about Barbuda is that it was hit really badly by Hurricane Irma in 2017.
Right.
And the houses are still really in disrepair. I saw one person still living in what apparently is a tent from the USAID. That's the Agency for International Development. That's what it said on the side of the tent, USAID shelter tent. Still after all these years outside the house that they're trying to repair. I did not know we sent relief down there. I'm glad we did. That was a nice thing to see. They say that the population is almost entirely of the African descent, the slaves from the African descent on that island.
Only about 1,600 people, too. I mean, not a big population.
Yeah, it's not huge.
Sorry, 1,300. I got it wrong. Yeah.
So after this short walk to the sea cliff cave, which was nice, you can walk along the coastline, for the afternoon they take you down to a place called Princess Diana Beach. And apparently she has visited the island, and that was her favorite beach. And so we got to spend an hour or two there just lounging on the beach with the typical beach bar sitting there on the side for your refreshment enjoyment. That's Barbuda, and then you take your boat ride back, and you're probably back. I think they leave at 7 in the morning, get back about maybe 5:30 in the afternoon. So it's a full day trip. The last of the three islands is Redonda, and that was kind of one of the reasons why I went down there. It's a single island. It's uninhabited. They used to have guano mining operations on it back in the early 1900s. It has a bit of a history in the sense of the Kingdom of Redonda. If I remember correctly, as the story goes, a British author who was living on Montserrat, Matthew Scheele, took him across a Montserrat to the island on his 15th birthday and crowned him king of the island. Now, let me tell you, it's difficult. There is no safe landing sites by boat on Redonda. I mean, there is one little bit of a harbor that you can kind of get into and possibly climb. Well, they did climb their way to the top, but there's no beaches.
Yeah,
it's pretty much all cliffs.
Okay.
So anyway, the self-proclaimed king basically existed by hereditary till 1967, and he was an author. So the story goes it got passed from one author to another after 1967 as the king. Obviously, the Antigua government doesn't recognize it as a separate king, and neither did the British. But it's a good story.
That's funny. Well, and you mentioned that there was a guano harvesting enterprise. And I'm not sure that everyone knows their history of this. This was a real precious commodity for years before the development of chemical fertilizers, before they figured out how to fix nitrogen basically from chemical analysis, basically extracted from the air so you could put it into natural or into unnatural fertilizers, as it were. A great book about it is The Alchemy of Air.
Yeah, I've never read a book on, I mean, guano operations, like, you've been to the Galapagos, so this is kind of, I reference that a lot when I talk about Redonda, and of course they had guano operations in Redonda and the islands too, because of all the seabird colony populations.
Right.
It's huge.
Well, and they were so valuable that in South America, at least two countries went to war over different islands covered mm-hmm. with guano. So, you know, until basically you could figure out a different way of getting the fertilizer, there was predictions that the earth was going to starve in the early, in the 1800s, I say, before that happened.
Hmm. So to get to the island itself, which I think there's less people who have visited Redonda Island than have been to Antarctica. You have to have special permission. The government okay. owns it, but they have an NGO called the Environmental Awareness Group, or the EAG. I reached out to them through my park contacts, and they were happy to, of course, I had to pay for it. It is not cheap getting out there. It's expensive getting out there, folks. I'll just be honest. It's a helicopter ride. And I did incorporate okay. this ride with my trip out to Montserrat, which we'll talk about here last. They have a helicopter ride. It'll take about maybe 4 or 5 hours because you'll spend an hour or two on the island. So you'll land on the island in the old habitation site of the mining, the ruins. I don't want to get calm. I mean, the ruins, but there's not that many of them. There's probably about only 5 or 6 structures left from the guano. And you land on the island. And then once you get off there and you're walking around, there's one trail north to south. I mean, the nesting birds colonies there, I mean, they don't know man. They're not afraid. That's why I kind of related to the, you don't have the sea life like you do in the Galapagos as far as right. sea lions and things like that. But they've got the magnificent frigates are there. The tropic birds are there. The brown boobies, mass boobies, the red-footed boobies are all nesting on this island. And they're nesting on the trail. They're nesting everywhere. So you're walking up the trail and you just walk around. There's the mom and its chick. And sure. they'll squawk yeah. at you. Don't really take, a couple of them I think did try to take a bite out of you a little bit. But you just walk around them and they're everywhere. They're flying above you, the view, the coastline. There's not that much vegetation as far uh-huh. as huge growth. They had to eradicate the goats and the rats that were on the island. It took them several years to do that. And now the vegetation's coming back. The birds are certainly breeding a lot more. The native population is certainly coming back. There's no predators on the island. Being the desert boy that I am, of course, they have 2 endemic species of lizards. So that was kind of, and they'll come right out up to you. I mean, they're not big. They're just like your small little lizard you'd see any other place. Uh-huh. The Redonda tree lizard and the Redonda ground, they call it the ground dragon. It's not that fish, but I'm trying to think of which one. The pilot put his finger out to one of them and it did snap at him. I gone, great. Pilot loses a finger by dragon on island. But no, there's nothing to be afraid of there. You just got to watch your footing though. The trail's good, but you just got to watch your footing on it. Like they said, it's the Galapagos of the Caribbean with all the wildlife in the sea. And it was just for 2 hours, we just walked amongst the birds. They flew over. We saw all the different chicks. The lizards would come out of the rocks and greet you. Beautiful island, but it is restricted. And mm-hmm. not only do you pay for the helicopter ride over there, along with the guide from the EAG group, but you also have to pay an admission fee to get onto the island.
Sure.
I mean, they're a nonprofit, so they have to continue their research, and it's well worth it. So if you want a unique experience, Redonda is definitely a unique experience. And like I said, there are not many people that got out to there. So enjoyed my time on that.
Interesting.
As I was saying, though, with Redonda, too, is as long as I was up in the air and I'd rented my helicopter, wasn't as much as it cost me to get to the base of Mount Everest, but it's a bit of time. And, of course, any of these trips by the helicopter, I'm a solo traveler these days, uh-huh. so obviously it's more for me. Obviously, if you travel with your partner or other friends or you have other people, the cost would certainly be a lot less for everybody. But I did go ahead and tack on Montserrat, which is the next island to the south, which is it's a dependency of the United Kingdom. It's still part of, it's the UK. It's not its own country. Uh-huh. The Arawaks call it the land of prickly bush. There's 2 ways to get there. You could do it as a day trip from Antigua. They have daily morning and afternoon flights. So you could fly over in the morning, spend the day, and we'll talk about the size of the island and all here in a second, and then fly back in the afternoon. The only problem right now with COVID is they have a 5-day mandatory quarantine to spend
oh, wow.
1 day.
Okay.
I elected to do it by helicopter since I was going to be up and it was the same helicopter company. We just diverted for an hour down to Montserrat. Okay. So seeing it from the air was actually pretty spectacular. And that, like I said, can be a day trip from Antigua also just for the helicopter. They call it the Emerald Isle of the Caribbean mm-hmm. for 2 reasons. The lush vegetation that's on the island, it's green. And it's where all the Irish ended up because the English kicked them off the other islands. So it became kind of a bit of an Irish colony in the Caribbean. So they call it the Emerald Island of the Caribbean. It's also referred to as the Pompeii of the Caribbean because of the volcano. Now, that volcano has erupted several times, 95, 97, 2000. It was the 2012 eruption that completely engulfed the city of Plymouth, their capital city. You'll read about the so-called, I think it's St. Patrick's Cathedral steeple that was sitting out of the ash. Well, that has now disintegrated, so you can't really see that. But flying over it in a helicopter, not only do you get up close to the top of the volcano, and it's not a volcano in the sense of the Hawaiian volcanoes where you see lava flowing. These right. are sulfur vents, and you can certainly smell them inside the helicopter. And they're still steaming, they're still fuming. It's still a very active volcano. And so seeing that at eye level by the helicopter, I think I would have done both, and the helicopter ride, and I wish I'd been on the ground, but I didn't do that part. So seeing that, I want to say two-thirds of the island is an exclusion zone. Right. You're not allowed in there because of the volcano. So that volcano eruption decimated and buried their airport. They ended up having to build a new one further up north. They evacuated everybody out of Plymouth and made new towns up north. So to get in, you can actually hire a guide. Special guides will take you into the exclusion zone in Plymouth. But they're special guides, and you have to have special permission. I will also say that to go from the airport was on the east side of the island. Plymouth was on the west side of the island. The road loops up and around. It's only 14 miles from one end to the other. So like I said, it's not a big if you're on the ground. But I did see it from the air. Seeing Plymouth buried, the governor's house buried in ash. They call it Ash Town. Hmm. And they're mining the ash. They have a program called Ash for Cash. But it was kind of an ash debris flow called a lahar that buried the town. They joke that Montserrat has the highest number per capita volcanologists in the world because every Montserratan is a volcanologist. And with that, of course, the island is still growing because of the lava. I think certainly a day trip if COVID restrictions get lifted and spend the time. I would like to go back and walk into Plymouth and see the ash area. But seeing it from the air was good.
When you say it was buried in ash, I'm seeing that it was like 1.4 meters or over 4.5 feet of ash. And some pictures, you see the light post, you know, the street light, and you'd, if you were standing in the ash, you'd have to reach down to the street light. So it's even heavier in some places. So pretty amazing and pretty awful if it's, you know, your town, but pretty amazing place to see.
Yeah, I think so. And like I said, seeing it from the air was impressive in and of itself from that aspect of things. But I don't think anybody lost their lives. I don't recall. I don't think there was any loss of lives. They were because they had it for. And it would be one of the places to visit on the ground, of course, is they have a volcano observatory and where all the volcanologists are. And so that would definitely be worth the, would be included in whatever trip you do once you're there. So there is a side story, and I don't know how much this is true, but I'm just going to say it, that Montserrat limes is what gave the British Navy, they used the limes to combat scurvy. Yes, limey for the British era. So that's, I asked several people if that really is a true story and never got a full, good answer on that, but I thought I'd just, what the heck, I'll throw it out there.
Well, we know that the part about the sailors being called limes did come from limes, but I didn't recall them coming from Montserrat. That's the part.
I'm just saying I'm throwing it out there for what the heck. It makes a good story.
Okay.
So that was kind of my trip, just to break it down. I did down to Nelson's Dockyard in one day. I did the Devil's Bridge, Fort Barrington, and Betty's Hope in another. I did the, because I did the helicopter flight to those two locations, Montserrat and Redonda. It was actually a day trip in a sense. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, Barbuda was a full day trip. 4 days, you can easily see everything that's there. I think I drove on every single road except the one across the North Tip. So not that hard, not that far. Do one, of course. You know, I love my food, so we talked about the lobsters. Right. They got a couple other things. You can have curried conch there. The red snapper is really good. They got a couple local dishes, one called a pepper pot, which is kind of a spinach stew. And then they had goat water, which was a goat stew.
Goat water, okay.
Yeah. Being a Caribbean island, of course, they make their own rum there. So I'll throw out their Cavalier and English Harbor are their two local brands, and English Harbor is, I liked it. Of course, it was the most expensive of the two, so naturally. So that was my favorite. They also have two local beers, the Carib and the Wadadeli, if I'm saying that right, on that. So that's kind of the culinary aspect of things. They weren't having rum tours because of the COVID situation, but you can certainly obviously get rum at any place that you go to, restaurant, bar, whatever you want there. So buy it yourself. So yeah, that was my adventure for a few days.
Excellent. You were standing in the prettiest spot in Antigua. Where are you standing and what are you looking at?
Well, you know, I was going to ask you what was yours, and then I'll tell you mine.
I'd say English Harbor.
Well, yeah, but from Shirley's Heights.
But from Shirley's Heights, exactly. Yeah,
it is a most spectacular view. Because it's actually two harbors. It's English Harbor, right. and I can't remember the name of the other one across, just behind it. It's green, the harbor, the ships, the architecture. It's just gorgeous.
And, yeah, I know the one you're talking about, and I can't remember.
Yeah, all of a sudden I should have
written it. Falmouth Harbor. Falmouth Harbor.
All right, there you go. There
because
you go.
Falmouth is the city Falmouth, at right. the top In of England. The harbor there.
Yeah.
Yep.
So there you go. That's the prettiest spot.
Excellent. One thing that makes you laugh and say, only in Antigua.
Not a lot, but I did get a chuckle out of the fact that the vessel that I took from Antigua to Barbuda was named Typhoon. And then Barbuda having been hit by the hurricane so severely that I'm taking a ship named Typhoon over to Barbuda.
Got it. Excellent. And if you had to summarize Antigua in just three words, what three words would you use?
History.
Yep.
Nature.
Yep.
Don't laugh. Cruises.
Okay.
I was going to say cruise ships, but that's two words. But yeah, I mean, that place can be, I can't imagine if five ships were there with everybody on board going to all the different historic main attractions on the islands.
Well, they're not only at the historic main attractions, they're also at the Stingray Bay and
the beaches.
Out on the beaches. And the beaches are lovely.
Yeah.
We enjoyed the beach that we went to. I couldn't tell you which of the 365 it was. I don't remember. It was on the west side of the island, but we passed a lot of lovely beaches on the way too.
And I did take a lot of pictures of a lot of the beaches from various different viewpoints. And yeah, you can't go wrong at any of them.
Yep, exactly. Excellent. Oh, actually, the one thing that I thought was really interesting was we were going over to the beach on the west side of the island from Nelson's Dockyard. There were a number of buildings that were made of limestone, which is a very natural. You'd expect that in one of the Caribbean islands. That is what most of the stone would be. But they were this beautiful churches made of green limestone. I'll put a picture in the show notes, but it really struck me as it would probably be my second choice for one of the most beautiful things we saw was this beautiful green limestone church against the gorgeous blue Caribbean sky.
Would you all, and I'll throw this in as a side, did you also notice how many Moravian churches were on the island?
I did not.
There are a lot. To me, it seemed like it was the predominant, I mean, Christianity being the predominant on the island, but the Moravian church.
Interesting.
And I had to, of course, come back and, you know, I mean, it comes from Czechoslovakia, Moravia area.
Yeah, from Jan Hus, or Jan Hus.
I thought there was more Moravian churches than there were any other denomination on the island. It just seemed like there was every little village I went into, there seemed like that was the main thing.
I did not notice that. Cool. Well, thanks so much. Our guest again has been Jeff Ulfs. And Jeff, can't talk Jeff into starting a travel blog, so we don't have anything to point you to, but we'll have some of his pictures in this particular episode. And Jeff, thank you so much for coming on Amateur Traveler and sharing with us your love for Antigua and Barbuda.
Thanks, Chris.
Thanks so much to the patrons of Amateur Traveler who help support the show financially. They get the show early. This week they got it about almost a week early because I was trying to get ready for a trip. If you're interested in becoming a patron of the show, you can go to patreon.com/amateurtraveler. I can't remember if I thanked the latest patron of the show, who is Peter, and a special thanks to one of the patrons of the show, Jeff Ulfs, who was our guest this week. There are, so far as I know, still slots open for the Amateur Traveler trip to Turkey in September of 2022. If you're listening before then, I hope you can make it. It should be a pretty great trip. I've mentioned it on the show before, but Istanbul, where we're starting, is one of my favorite cities. And so if you do come on the trip, come a couple days early, because you're going to want to make sure that you see that beautiful city. And with that, we're going to end this episode of Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. And thanks so much for listening.